Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the 2025 Muscular Dystrophy Association's annual clinical and scientific conference in Dallas. Our guest is Lily Sander, a 17-year-old junior in high school from Charlotte, North Carolina. Lily happens to have Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, which is one of the more than 300 rare conditions that fall under the MDA umbrella. Lily, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
So this is not a disease we regularly cover, and I'm not sure how much our listeners know about CMT. Tell us about it, and then we'll talk about you.
Yeah, so CMT is a disease that affects the peripheral nerves. So below the elbow and below the knee, muscles deteriorate. It is degenerative, so nerves and muscles gradually lose function, and it causes patients to have mobility issues, issues with balance, and there are some structural differences with limbs because of it.
And just for everybody who's listening, Lily has just been chosen as 2025 MDA National Ambassador. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your life. You're 17, you live in Charlotte, you're in high school. As you said, you're a normal teenager, but you have this condition. Tell us about you.
Yeah, so I am just a regular teenage girl at home, but I do have a disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth, as we've discussed, and that has impacted my life in a multitude of ways. Obviously, physically, I have trouble with certain things, with dexterity, and I use medical devices to help me navigate the world. But I also try to find a balance between doing advocacy work and also getting through high school and being with my friends. So I started doing advocacy work very young through the MDA, and it's just blossomed from there. And I have done a multitude of projects and public speaking engagements, and that has led me to where I am today with you.
Wonderful. Before we talk about that, though, let me ask, when were you diagnosed with CMT?
I was diagnosed at around age 4 or 5 after a year and a half of searching for answers. I began to lose function and I couldn't walk properly. My feet turned into club feet and no doctor could give us answers. We were eventually referred to the MDA Care Center in my area. And then from there, we were referred to Dr. Michael Shai in Iowa, who also is a care center director. So really my journey started with the MDA, and that is how I got diagnosed and eventually treated throughout my childhood.
At that time, how much was known about CMT?
Not a lot. Doctors had no idea what the disease was, except for a few specialists like Dr. Shai. It was an incredibly rare thing to know about. And so we were sent on this journey of, okay, your daughter has an incredibly rare disease. And not only that, I have a very rare subtype. So I'm one of about a handful of known cases of my specific genetics. So from there, we decided, okay, we need to go home and we need to get connected with others.
Well, one thing I'd like to just say is that from what I understand, CMT in general is rare. It's something like one in every 2,500 people have the disease. But you're saying that your subtype is even more rare.
Correct. Yes. So CMT is rare, but it's the most commonly inherited peripheral neuropathy. So it's less rare than we think. But I have CMT1E as well as HNPP, which is hereditary neuropathy with liability to pressure palsy. So 1E is about 1% of the CMT population. So that's very small. But then along with HNPP, the combination of genes are so incredibly rare that there have only been a few documented cases.
A few meaning how many?
I know of 3, maybe, including myself.
In the whole world?
Yeah. I mean, the numbers could have changed since I was diagnosed, but we were presented with those figures as this is incredibly rare.
So, okay, with that in mind, what is life like with this very rare disease?
Life has been interesting. I have undergone many surgeries to try to improve my feet and hand function. And I've been seen by so many doctors that I've lost count. And I've managed my symptoms through physical therapy. There is no treatment or cure. We are working on it and we are very close. But I've had to just navigate life with the disease. I find ways to accommodate myself and to manage my energy and my fatigue and my pain. So truly, it's just a trial and error process for living with this disease.
When you say no cure and no treatment, that means you're not on anything.
No, I don't have anything to manage my CMT other than exercise. That is what physicians recommend to keep the muscles that you do have strong. That's the best way to have a good outcome.
But what about pain?
Some people take prescription medicines, but I have not gone that route yet. That is something that I will probably explore in the future. But for now, I just manage the best I can at home, as well as in physical and occupational therapy.
What about over-the-counter meds?
Yeah, so just like you will have a headache and you take a Tylenol, same is true for CMT patients that have leg pain or nerve pain or pain from our unique walking or hand function that can cause discomfort.
So in a practical sense, I mean, you're in high school. How does this affect your day-to-day classes, socializing, going out? How does it affect you on a daily basis?
Yeah, so I started high school using a motorized wheelchair, but eventually I was able to improve my muscle function along with AFOs. So I'm able to navigate the school day normally, except I do use an elevator, but I'm able to keep up with my peers with some difficulty. I have fatigue and I have pain. So after a long day at school, I'm just wiped out, honestly.
Sure.
But I'm trying to find a balance between going out and being with my friends and walking around and also trying to manage my CMT symptoms. And I'll be honest, I'm not the best at that.
Sometimes. What symptoms are we talking about?
Fatigue, pain, weakness, that kind of thing. And I don't have answers. I'm not the best at striking that balance because I am such a go, go, go person. So it's been interesting to try to learn how to manage my symptoms while doing everything I want to do.
What about dexterity, you know, hand strength and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so my hand strength has gotten progressively weaker throughout my life. I've had a few different surgeries from brilliant surgeons and physicians that have overseen my care. So my hand function is better than it has ever been, but it is still a challenge. I have to find ways to accommodate myself with tools or methods of voice typing or things like that, just finding ways to accommodate myself. But also, I just really have to use my willpower. I can do most things with my hands, but it may take longer or it looks different. My hands look different, but I'm still able to accomplish the things that I need to accomplish.
For example, a laptop. Typing, that will be a problem for you.
Yeah, typing is difficult for me, but I'm a student, so I have to keep up. Typing is often easier than writing, so I'm able to use a computer at school. But also my hands get tired and fatigued, and I just have to take it slow and find ways to take breaks. And voice typing is a great option. The technology is not perfect, but it's getting there and it's accessible to anyone that uses Google Docs. So that's very exciting.
So here's a question. How accommodating are teachers and fellow students to you?
Yeah, so I've been very lucky. I have amazing teachers. I have had issues in the past where teachers don't want to accommodate, but most teachers truly do want all students to succeed. And it's just a matter of understanding disability. So I'll have a meeting with them at the beginning of the year, explain who I am and how CMT affects me. And usually there's no problem and I've met with compassion and care. Students are a different story. High schoolers don't understand disability and there's often a lack of compassion that is met with misunderstanding. So it's been difficult to navigate that side of things, but I found incredibly supportive friends who understand disability and see me for who I am, but also see the challenges that I'm presented with.
I've often heard people with rare diseases saying they don't particularly like being defined by their disease, and yet you're in a position where you sometimes have to explain to people what you have, what it's called, and how it affects you, right?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between being defined by something and having it inform part of your identity. I often find myself feeling uncomfortable when people say, oh, I don't see you as disabled, because being disabled is a part of my identity. It's a big part of the work I do, and it has informed a lot of my personality traits. I think I'm more compassionate and more understanding. And so it's part of our identities, but it doesn't define a whole person. And I think a lot of people with diseases and disabilities don't want people to just see their diagnosis. They want to be seen first, but also they want the nuances of their diagnosis to be understood by those around them.
Of course. Absolutely. Are you from North Carolina originally?
I was born in Colorado, but okay. I moved to North Carolina. And shortly after we moved, that's when my symptoms started presenting themselves.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Question. Now, I just want to ask about scholastically, what are you studying? And you understand you want to continue on to college. And what's your field of interest?
Yeah. So I love the humanities. I love sociology, criminal justice, psychology, English. That is where my heart is. So I'm looking at policy and law right now, but mm-hmm. I've also been interested in public health, kind of the social justice side of that. So as I'm touring colleges and deciding where I want to further my academic career, I'm exploring a few different options. But at the end of the day, a lot of it has been affected by growing up with a disability. So I'm looking at careers that could help my community and empower me to use my story to enact change.
Amazing. You don't find too many 17-year-olds who are this articulate at all. You briefly mentioned something about a nonprofit that you started. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I read a book about period poverty, and it completely changed my perspective.
Do you want to explain what that is, first of all, to our listeners?
Yes, so period poverty is the lack of access to menstrual products such as pads, tampons, that help people manage their periods. So without having those supplies, going to work and school becomes difficult or impossible. So often it is a choice between, okay, do I go to school and figure out how to manage and get my education, or do I have to stay home? And a lot of the times it's not a choice. Unhoused people have to choose between buying these very expensive products and eating or buying other necessities. So it's very difficult. Tampons and pads are very expensive. So it puts people in a very tough position a lot of times. So I was made aware of this and I called one of my friends and I said, we need to do something about this. So we started a few drives locally and then that blossomed into us getting our 501c3 certification. And then eventually now we're working with schools to get tampon and pad machines installed in bathrooms. And we have been quite successful.
What's your organization called?
It's called Period.
That's it? Period?
Yeah.
And you also mentioned before in our conversation that you are tutoring elementary and middle school kids.
Yes. I've been tutoring for years now. I started very young. I would always play teacher as a child, and I was very interested in education. And so now I get to play teacher as my job. So I focus in early mathematics and foundational literacy. So teaching kids how to read, how to do math, but I really have a conceptual focus for these things. I am very interested in the science that is behind learning and really how to help my kids succeed.
My kids?
Yeah, I call them my kids because they're very near and dear to me. And, you know, we spend a lot of time learning together. So I don't know. I care about my students a lot and about their success and well-being.
Wonderful. Last question. This MDA Ambassador Award, was this something you were expecting?
So I went to Hill Day in the fall, which is an event that the MDA hosts where they bring together advocates, people with neuromuscular diseases from across the country, and we go to Capitol Hill and we talk to our lawmakers and our representatives, and we advocate for change that would directly impact us. There, I became more involved with the MDA, and I had always seen stuff about national ambassador positions, and I thought it was so exciting and so cool to have that kind of reach.
Yeah.
So I planted the seed with one of the people that was with me, but I wasn't expecting anything until I got an interview. And then at the end of the interview, they told me, hey, just so you know, you are the candidate we want to go with. And so it was a big surprise for me. I wasn't expecting for it to be that quick. So it was a pleasant surprise, to say the least.
Congratulations. We're out of time. We've been talking with Lily Sander, who is the 2025 MDA Ambassador. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.